Welcome back to the Take Me Later podcast. I'm your host, Noah Rubin, and this is episode 65. Today, we're going to be criticizing my initial rookie rankings following the 2024 NBA draft. So let's go ahead and get into it. Quickly, before we get into talking about some rookie rankings, I just wanted to remind you, the support for this Fantasy Basketball International podcast is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Shaving your jewels doesn't have to be risky business anymore, thanks to the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra. This trimmer is all about keeping things smooth and safe so you can trim with confidence. Treat your wrinkle berries and join the 10 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by going to manscaped.com to get 20% off plus free shipping with the code FBI20. With Manscaped, it's easy grooming, no surprises. We know every dude gets the heebie-jeebies when it's time for a close shave down under, especially when using the wrong tools. That's precisely why Manscaped is my go-to for those delicate spots. Trust me, this trimmer will be your crown jewel's new best buddy. Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code FBI20 at manscaped.com. That is 20% off plus free shipping with the code FBI20 at manscaped.com. Show your balls some love and feel free as a dove. As I said, we are going to be criticizing my dynasty rookie rankings following the draft. I believe I ranked 76 players over at Roto World, had a column up there, had analysis for at least the top 30, and then a few others sprinkled in there where I felt analysis was appropriate or a couple guys that I liked. But I'm going to go ahead and pull this up on the screen under a slideshow that I made, just so we can all follow along and see where I had players ranked. And then we can talk about them a little bit and see where there's certain guys that I might have a little higher, maybe have some a little lower, without getting into necessarily specifics for ranks, just guys that I kind of feel a little differently about and like why, or different moves that have happened that may or may not impact them. So we'll go ahead and get into it. It starts off with Alex Saar at number one. He has been my number one prospect the entire time as far as talent. Now he's in Washington in a situation where he's wanting to play power forward. That was the reported reason that he didn't work out for the Hawks or didn't want to be in Atlanta, or there was other reports that it was just his management team that didn't want him in Atlanta. Either way, he's now in Washington, and it looks like he's going to play power forward. They signed Jonas Valanciunas to play center, 3 years, $30 million. They still have Marvin Bagley. They also re-signed Rashawn Holmes. And then just before I started the show, they re-signed Tristan Vukcevic on a two-way deal. That's a lot of bigs. Vukcevic is probably not even going to be in the center rotation to start the season. May spend some time at power forward at times, but he's on a two-way deal, expecting him to be in the G League early on. But Saar could still start at power forward. It would be very surprising to me if they kept Kyle Kuzma at this point. I don't know what kind of value they'll get back for him. The report is that they want two firsts. We'll see if that happens. But yeah, he's still my number one player in this class. Signing Valanciunas to a 3-year, $30 million deal is, one, pretty good deal for Washington, and two, it's not changing how I feel about Saar, partially because he wants to play a power forward anyway, and I would assume that they're going to start him at power forward. And because I still think he's a long-term center, I don't think Valanciunas is changing that, but we'll see exactly how that plays out. They have Malcolm Brogdon there now. Jordan Poole's still there, obviously, a couple of good wings. And Corey Kispert and Bilal Coulibaly. And then obviously also drafted Bob Carrington and Keyshawn George as well. So a lot of talent in Washington, a lot of fun. A fun outlook, fun future, potentially if things break their way. We'll talk about the other two guys that they drafted in the first round that I just mentioned later on in this show. But Saar is still number one for me. Adding Valanciunas doesn't change that. Donovan Clingan, not much has happened in Portland since they drafted him as far as things that would impact him. I think DeAndre Ayton is going to continue to at least have his name hovered around in trade rumors. We'll see if anything actually happens. But this is Klingon being a talented player that I think his game will translate pretty well for fantasy in the traditional center sense. And he still has some upside. So it's not just like a, oh, he's going to come in and be good quicker than others because he's a big. I think he also has some upside to be very good in fantasy. The question is, how many minutes is he going to play? And I think early on, if they keep Ayton, we're probably looking at 18 to 20 minutes as a rookie for Klingon, which is eh. But I don't think that DeAndre Ayton is their center of the future. I believe that's Donovan Klingon. So at some point, Ayton will be gone and Klingon will be starting. There's also a chance that if just Portland isn't very good this year, which has kind of been the case for a while, and they're not afraid to tank, that they'll just play Donovan Klingon 36, 40 minutes a game the final few weeks or even month of the season. We'll see. They have a lot of talent. If a lot of guys take steps, who knows, maybe they'll be playing competitive basketball by the end of the season. That's a question mark right now. But I still like Klingon a lot long term. And if they trade Ayton and give Klingon minutes, I like him a lot in the short term. So it works out well. Reed Sheppard is still three. Again, not much has changed. I don't think re-signing Aaron Holiday is changing much there. But he's still one of the best shooting prospects in a while, potentially ever. The steal rate is insane. Block rate was pretty good for a guard. 42-inch vertical. Same reasons I liked him before the draft. I like him now. I think he's a big part of Houston's future. And that's why, even though he might not see a ton of minutes early on or potentially the first couple of years, I still really like him long term. Houston has reportedly been trying to do some consolidation trades to try and win now. I don't think Sheppard would be part of those. But if they're trading like Jalen Green, Cam Whitmore, this is just spitballing. I don't know which other prospects they would trade, but some sort of consolidation trade to bring in a superstar to try and win now, then more minutes for Reed Sheppard earlier, quicker, but still really like him long-term. Nikola Topic, not going to play as a rookie. Based on reports, we'll see if maybe things change with this timeline, but it doesn't make much sense for the Thunder to try and make things work if just because he's maybe healthy in March, because they're going to be competing for playoff positioning in the West more likely than not. So I still like Topic long-term a lot. I wasn't as high on him pre-draft as other people were. I just like this landing spot, even though it at first I was like, eh. But now it's like, okay, this is a great situation for him to develop. He's a ridiculous passer, was a very, very good finisher. Now he's got questions about his shot and defense. Those are my questions. But he'll have a lot of time off to work on those things. I would assume that his shot improves before he actually makes his debut as a rookie. And they're going to be patient with him. So it's not like he's going to get tossed out there. Had he been healthy, for example, and a team like Washington took him and started him from day one, you know, there's different ways for players to grow, but I think that this will be a good situation for him. And that's why I bumped him up my rankings after he got drafted to the Thunder. So they've been good with player development. We'll see how this works out long-term with SGA and Cason Wallace still there. So I'm not exactly sure how the minutes will play out, but they'll either make a trade with one, either Wallace or Topic at some point, or they'll figure out a way to give all three of them plenty of minutes. So love him long-term, and I'm assuming that he'll be able to develop and work on the things that I had questions about pre-draft. And then five, I have Ron Holland, who got drafted fifth to Detroit. And I like this landing spot for him. Assistant coach Fred Vinson from New Orleans, who worked with a number of players on improving their shot, including Lonzo Ball and Herb Jones, will now get a chance to work with Ron Holland and Asar Thompson, which the shot was the main question I had with Holland. So if he's able to turn both those guys into competent shooters, guys that can shoot 33, 35% from three and at least space the floor a little bit and not be guys that are forced to shoot shots because it's an easy way to beat the team, then that's a big W, big win, because Haaland is a freak athlete and a really good defender. I'm not super confident in him as a guy that can create his own shot, but I think he's a guy that can get to the basket and knock down, catch, and shoot threes, and that'll work really well with Cade Cunningham. Assuming he develops that shot, and the defense, I'm very confident in as well. So Detroit has the pieces. They've been able to bring in some very talented players, and now it's just about making it all fit together. So we'll see how things play out, but I like Haaland's, like, for his dynasty outlook as well. I think he's a guy that's going to be able to get steals and hopefully improve enough as a shooter to get some threes, and then just be on the floor enough to get other stats, score well, rebound well. We'll see. But I do really like him landing in Detroit. 6-10. Well, at six, I have Rob Dillingham, who got drafted by San Antonio, traded to Minnesota. So now he will be the backup point guard, or at least a reserve as a rookie. Not at all where I expected him to be. I don't think anybody expected him in Minnesota pre-draft simply because they were picking in the late 20s. But they traded up. They traded picks that won't be made for like 6 years, 7 years, five or six years, whatever. But they got a guy that can be their point guard of the future. Mike Conley is old for a point guard in the NBA. We'll say it like that because he's not old. He's in his 30s. But this is a guy that can be their point guard of the future if he develops. He's got the flashy handles, the shot creation, the fun offensive stuff. Now he can go learn from Mike Conley about the unfun offensive stuff and how to take care of the ball a little bit better. And I really like this landing spot. As a rookie, he'll probably still be able to play 15 to 20 minutes per game, come in and be fun on offense. And then if he works on the other parts of his game, such as efficiency and improve defensively, that's even better for him long-term. And if he never turns out to be a great defender, he has Anthony Edwards there. He has Jaden McDaniels on the other side. He's got Rudy Gobert down low. I mean, obviously that won't be forever, but this is a very good defensive team. So having a guy like Rob Dillingham, who has questions about being a defender, I think it's a great spot for him to still be able to thrive. So love that landing spot. Really like him as a talent, and now I'm confident in his development. Seven, I have Zach Edey. I had Edey significantly lower before the draft, but I think investing a top 10 pick in a player is notable. It means something. I don't think he's a player I would have invested a top 10 pick in, but he was unreal in college. And now there's a chance he could start, at least play a ton of minutes as a rookie. So does he fit perfectly? I don't really love the fit. We'll see. Maybe like if he's able to run pick and rolls with John Morant, I think that'll be good. My main question is, he was very successful in college with his back to the basket and getting to the free throw line. I think that having as much spacing up there for John Morant to operate is critical for Memphis. So we'll see exactly how that fits. But even if it's not a perfect fit for Memphis and they're like, hey, like we need, you know, a better spacer on the floor or whatever. I mean, they made it work with Steven Adams, so I'm not too terribly concerned about that. But if it ends up limiting Zach Edey to 20 minutes per game, I mean, that's enough time for him to get a lot of either like rebounds and blocks, shoot a high percentage. He's not a horrible free throw shooter. I like this fit, and this where he was drafted definitely bumped him up my rankings. This would be more of a win now pick. So if I'm trying to win now in my dynasty league, I'm probably not going to take Topic. If I'm trying to win now, I'm probably going to take Zach Edey. If I'm in the middle of a rebuild in my dynasty league, Zach Edey should be not in my top 10. But this is just general values. So just like with any dynasty ranking, apply it to your league apply it to your team direction. I think that Edie is a player that is worth potentially trading up for in a dynasty league if you are really trying to win now, just because this is considered a weaker class. But I think Edie is going to be able to really contribute early on from day one. Number eight, I have Modest Buzelis. I like him coming into the draft as well. I was able to talk myself more into Chicago as a landing spot. Originally, I was like, just because of kind of what they've been the last few years. I was like, I don't know that I really love this. They re-signed Patrick Williams as well, so that's kind of concerning. But if they really are going to trade DeMar DeRozan, and they really are going to trade Zach LaVine, and they really are going to finally rebuild, which is what we've been kind of talking about the last 2 years, Modest Buzelis might play a good bit as a rookie and get to work through struggles. He had some really bad moments in the G League, but if he's able to, one, have Kobe White, Josh Giddey, Ayo Dosunmu setting him up for easier looks, he's not having to come into the NBA from day one and create his own shot. That could help him be better as a rookie. And he averaged 0.9 threes, 0.9 steals, and 1.9 blocks last year in the G League. That'll play pretty well in fantasy. I'm not expecting him to come in as a rookie and be averaging 2 blocks per game, but those like defensive stats will play well in fantasy. Now we just need him to improve his efficiency. I think having Kobe White, Giddey, Sumu, like those things will help. So I like this landing spot, and I think if Chicago continues to move towards a rebuild, I will like it more. Is there a scenario where they start Kobe White, Josh Giddey, Patrick Williams, and Modest Buzelis and Vucevic, assuming they trade DeMar and Zach LaVine and don't get anybody back that they'd rather start? Like, I think that's a scenario that would be ideal for fantasy for Buzelis, but we'll see exactly what happens. Maybe Chicago just won't make any moves, and then this will be a frustrating pick, and he'll kind of go down on rankings. But I really feel like it's finally the summer that Chicago does the right thing, moves towards a tank. Number nine, I have Zachary Risache, who was the number one overall pick to the Hawks. And he's a guy that I had ranked outside my top 10. Originally, I was not interested in him being a Hawk. I don't think that he should have been the pick, but we're past that. That doesn't matter anymore. The Hawks made the pick. He went number one, and he's now with the team. So how does he fit in? Well, all the narrative stuff I've heard is good. Or read, I guess. I don't hear things. I read things. And so I think I'm a little bit more hopeful that works out long term, but I don't think that that necessarily makes him a great fantasy player. I mean, I think he can do some like straight line drives off of closeouts, and he can knock down threes, and defensively, you know, supposed to be a good defender. I don't know that necessarily translates to defensive stats. He had a negative assist turnover ratio last year. That's not ideal. So could he be a really tall 3-and-D player that contributes to winning in Atlanta? Potentially. I think that's like what they imagined when they drafted him. Am I banking on him being a very good fantasy basketball player? Not exactly. And that's okay. I don't think the Hawks were worried about fantasy stats when they took him number one. I don't think he has the most upside in the draft. I don't think he has the highest floor in the draft. But we'll see. Maybe it'll work out really well, and he'll be a guy that can like kind of sort of contribute in fantasy, like be a top 100, maybe top 75 guy a few seasons, maybe. I don't really see where his stat set is going to translate in a way that allows that to happen. But we'll see. That's why he went number one, but he is number nine on my board. I still think him going number one is significant enough that you can't let him fall much further past this, because there was reports that other teams had him number one. So it's entirely possible that like I'm wrong and this works out really well. That is a scenario. So I don't think he should be going in top fives. I probably wouldn't let him go outside the top 10 in a rookie draft. But number 10, I do have Cody Williams, who went 10th and went 10th to Utah on a very, very talented team. He's a player that I really liked coming into the draft. And for most of the season, still high on his upside. But I think it is going to take time to develop. I do like the landing spot in Utah where he'll be given the time to develop. They have a lot of talent on that team, but it doesn't seem like this isn't going to be the year that they change everything around and say, okay, playoff mandate. Like we're doing this thing. Like, no, there's been reports that teams are heavily aggressively pursuing Lauri Markkanen. And then Walker Kessler is also a name that has popped up in trade rumors for some reason. So Cody Williams could play more as a rookie than we may have expected when he got drafted initially, especially if Markkanen's traded. I know a lot of the rookies recently haven't played a lot early on and have slowly worked their way into minutes. Like that's what we saw last year with Taylor Hendricks. We saw it earlier last year with Keyonte George. We saw it later than Hendricks with Bryce Sensabaugh last year. So we'll see exactly how that works out. I think the rest of the summer in Utah is going to determine exactly how good this pick is, but I do like it long-term. Still really like Cody Williams long-term. Utah is they're building a fun team. So hopefully everybody can continue to pan out. We'll talk about more Jazz players in a bit. But right now we're going to move on to the other or one of the other Washington picks. It's Bob Carrington, who kind of rose up draft boards late in the process. A lot of people really liked him, a guy that can create his own shot. I think that there will be some struggles just like there is with every rookie during his rookie season in Washington he'll learn from Malcolm Brogdon. I think that'll be good. And he may take a little bit of time to develop, and I think he'll have some really fun moments as a rookie, but this would be more of a long-term play. Just because I think he's going to be very good, but there's going to be adjustments just like it is with every rookie guard. So maybe not the most win now pick here, but I like it long-term. Stephon Castle is a guy that I have him 12th. I had him much higher on my board, like just my general draft board. I had him 2, I believe. But I don't really see the fantasy stat set translating. He went into the draft process talking about wanting to play point guard, or at least representatives, rumors saying that he wanted to play point guard. San Antonio drafted him, and then they just signed Chris Paul. So Stephon Castle is not playing point guard as a rookie. He may see minutes at point guard. He's not going to start the season playing point guard. That's great, though. He's going to learn from Chris Paul. That's not a bad player to learn from as a rookie. So I do like that for his long-term development, but do I think he's a guy that can average 7 assists per game at some point of his career, 7 or 8? Probably not. That'd be like best case scenario. I think 5 or 6 would also be a very good scenario. He's a very good defender, but not necessarily getting a ton of steals. The shot is a question mark. So overall as a player, I really like him. And I think he's going to fit really well with the Spurs and help them win. But if we're looking at fantasy, I'm not seeing the stat set translate as well. Devin Carter, 13, went to the Kings, I believe, at pick 13 as well. And he's a guy that can contribute from day one, which is great for the Kings. He was able to shoot the ball really well last year and is going to be able to play defense, which I think the Kings can always use. They have a number of very talented offensive players. So they've been really one of the best offensive teams. They have struggled more on the defensive end. So having him and Keon Ellis will be a lot of fun. They don't have Davion Mitchell anymore, so Devin Carter can step in and be the new guy that is going to be their young prospect that will one day be an elite defender. And I feel better about that than I did with – or than I feel like that's going to work out better than Davion Mitchell did. Not that I had low expectations for Davion Mitchell early on. I think – he's an older prospect, but he's a safe pick here. A win now pick, if you will. Should be able to get, I mean, he was a really good rebounder despite being, what is he, 6'3", I believe. Really good rebounder in college. Probably won't be asked to score quite as much, but can shoot. Average over a steal and over a block. So, yeah, the fantasy stats, that looks good. Hopefully that'll be able to translate. So that's why I have him here. But, yeah, definitely more of a win-now pick. Next we have Eve Misi, who went to the Pelicans. And it's a bit of a clunky fit because he, to me, is, I believe, a slightly taller Clint Capella-esque player to me. Good rim runner. Has, I think, upside as a defender, or will be a good defender, and then also has the upside to maybe switch at times. Still working on his rebounding. I believe his rebounding was a little bit low, but he's only been playing basketball for like a handful of years. But on offense, he's going to be catching lobs, and that's about it. So it's very limited. And is that the kind of player you want next to Zion Williamson? Perhaps not, which is why I have him as low as I do. Because honestly, I think if you're looking at him as a starting center in year one, with DeJounte Murray and CJ McCollum feeding him the ball, that sounds like a recipe for success in fantasy. Not as good as, I think, one of the top few point guards in the league throwing him lobs or anything like that, but should get some easy looks with the amount of offensive talent around him. And they just don't have anybody else at center right now. So sure, moves will still be made by the Pelicans, like Brandon Ingram. I'd be very shocked if he wasn't traded at some point based on how the rumors have been swirling around him since they lost in the playoffs. But I feel like Eve Misi is at least going to play 20 to 25 minutes as a rookie. And if they don't really bring in anybody else, he might play a ton more than that. So this is more about opportunity early on and still liking his upside for fantasy long-term. Even though this fit specifically with New Orleans isn't ideal. And then the last one's Ryan Dunn, who went 28. Excuse me, the last one for this slide. There's 15 more players to talk about. Ryan Dunn went to the Suns, pick 28, I believe. And he was unreal defensively in college. His block rate was over 10, which pretty much is only bigs that do that. And he's a wing slash power forward, I guess you could say. But that's basically a wing in the modern NBA. The offense is atrocious, but the Suns have enough of that. They need more defense. And having Ryan Dunn, is, I think, it's going to be very valuable for them year one. So, yeah, I think he's going to have a role. And if he can at least improve as a shooter enough that teams can't just leave him wide open and go double KD and Devin Booker every single play, then he can either knock down shots enough or they can involve him in the offense in ways that allow him to be successful despite not being a great offensive player right now. I think this is a home run pick for the Suns, and I wouldn't be shocked if he's like way higher in rankings for this class by the end of the year. He's a guy I've been really high on the whole time that I would have taken probably around pick 15, potentially earlier if I were drafting as an NBA team. But no, it's a great fit for the Suns. So I'm excited to see what he can do in year one and long term. 16, we have Isaiah Collier, who went 29th to the Jazz. Kind of interesting to see, or I'm interested to see how their backcourt rotation kind of looks, because they've had, like last year, it was Colin Sexton, Keontae George, Jordan Clarkson, I mean, Talen Horton-Tucker at times, Chris Dunn at times. And now they have this guy that was at one point the number one overall prospect in their class that slipped to 29 after a less than ideal season at USC. I'm not banking on, oh, he wasn't that great at USC, so he's not going to be good in the NBA. I think this was a great value pick for the Jazz. I'm excited about him long-term. I think that potentially this could move Keontae George into more of a two-guard role with Collier at point guard long-term. The minutes may not be there immediately, but he's too talented for them to, for the league to have allowed him to slip as far as he did. So great value for the Jazz. I think he deserves to go like this early, despite being at the end of the first round in the real draft. It's all going to be about how, like, how quickly he makes an impact is how quickly they move off of Colin Sexton / Jordan Clarkson / Chris Dunn, who I believe they actually might have already moved off of. Because I believe he's with the Clippers. Yes, he is now with the Clippers. So that's good. So it could be some minutes, but how quickly they move to, hey, Isaiah Collier and Keontae George are guards of the future. That's how quickly he's going to make an impact in fantasy. It may take a little bit of time. Ooh. Next guy is Tijon Salon, who went sixth to Charlotte. And I liked him as a guy going in this range in the draft. And then Charlotte took him at six. And I'm not going to criticize Charlotte for getting their guy. That's what I think teams should do. If you believe in a guy, go take him where your pick is. Don't risk trading down and potentially not getting your guy just to get some value if you really believe in them. So I do have a little bit of optimism here. Just the fact that Charlotte was this much like, hey, like, we really need to get this guy in our building. Like, he means so much that we can't trade down, because there was rumors of them trading down with Memphis, who picked at nine. And I don't think that would have been an issue to get Salon at nine. I think that there was also reports that maybe San Antonio was interested earlier on in the process. So maybe that was what they were scared of. But I think this is probably a good value for dynasty managers to be able to get a guy that went in the top 10 this late in their draft. So I would be happy to take him here. I don't feel super confident in the Charlotte Hornets being able to develop him into being worthy of a top 10 pick. And that's kind of my reservation. I believe he already has an injury. I'll try and look that up as I'm saying it, but something that's going to keep him sidelined for at least a little bit. But a guy that went that early, I think still deserves to go in the top 20 in rookie drafts, even if we're not super high on him. So it's not a major injury. It's just the start of summer league minicamp. Suffered a laceration near his knee. So nothing concerning long-term. So scratch the whole injury thing. That's a little bit of a pun, but no concern long-term there. Just hopefully he's going to pan out the way that the Hornets think he will. Jared McCain went to Philly. I had him here because it was like, hey, they don't have anybody else on their roster right now. They have obviously added a ton of guys since the draft, including Paul George. I still think Jared McCain is going to have a pretty big role as a rookie. De'Anthony Melton's gone. So I think it wouldn't be shocking if McCain was just like the backup point guard to Tyrese Maxey, playing 15 to 20 minutes a game. It's not a ton of time for fantasy. I wouldn't be looking at him in redraft leagues, but I do like him as a talent, and I think getting to play behind Tyrese Maxey for a few years and develop, learn from him, and then hopefully one day be more of a starter in the NBA, I think that's a very possible path for him. So I like that. Kyle Filipowski fell to Utah in the second round. He's a guy that a lot of people were expecting to go earlier. There was obviously stuff that came out about him, which I'm not going to go into because, like, I don't know details. So it was weird stuff, so I'm not going to go into it. But I think that this isn't a horrible landing spot for him and for what he can provide. They traded Kelly Olynyk at the trade deadline last year, and I think he can kind of be a similar type of big. A guy that can space the floor better than Walker Kessler can. Kind of a change of pace guy earlier on in his career. that comes in, plays. I mean, it, again, just like with the other Utah guys, it depends on what moves they make for the rest of the summer. But a guy that can space the floor and then occasionally get some blocks, get some decent rebounds, but on offense, mostly just spacing the floor, which could translate into some fantasy success there long term. He continues to develop. I think he had some passing flashes in college as well, which is exciting. So if they trade Kessler, or if they have those two be the bigs, trade John Collins, something like that, then yeah, there's a path for minutes for Filipowski early on. But like a lot of these guys, it's probably more of a long-term play if he turns out to be, you know, really good. He might just be like a solid rotation piece. That wouldn't be surprising at all. And he could be a guy that really contributes to winning. So rounding out the top 20, we have Khalil Ware, who went to Miami. In the pre-draft process, just like watching him, reading about him, looking at stats, I think he has kind of the upside to be really freaking good and do a little bit of everything. Right now, I think he'll probably spend a little bit of time at the four, maybe a little bit. But really, they'll actually have a backup center in Miami, which is something to feel good about. Miami hasn't really made a bad first-round draft pick in like a decade, or at least a bad top 20 pick in like a decade. And I think the last one was Justice Winslow. That wasn't ideal. And it wasn't like, I mean, he had some very good years. So I trust Miami's scouting department to make a good pick. I liked his talent beforehand. I'm not seeing a path to a ton of minutes with Bam there early on, but things change quickly in the NBA. So yeah, I like him as a talent, but being stuck in a backup role isn't ideal early on. So we'll see, especially when it's a backup behind an elite center, which allows us to transition to Daron Holmes, who went to Denver. They traded up to get him, which means something. They finally have a backup for Jokic, a guy that can do a little bit of everything, space the floor. So hopefully they're not quite as bad when Jokic is off the floor. Just like with Ware, not seeing how that's going to get him a ton of minutes early on or allow him to be a really good fantasy player early on. But maybe he develops, transitions into playing some power forward minutes. Something that allows him to be on the floor at the same time as Jokic. So don't hate it. I just don't love it early on. 22, Jalen Tyson to Cleveland. Again, early on, I think kind of a 3-and-D guy. He showed some shot creation during his last college season at Cal. But I don't think that's anything that Cleveland needs him to do right now. So he still has the upside. But because they don't really need him to be that guy early on, it might be a few years, and at that point, I'm not confident that he's going to have a breakout where he's a star. I think that maybe he's able to show a little bit more in a few years and be more of a shot-creating role player, but right now, that's not really what Cleveland needs from him most of the time. Maybe they'll allow him to do that at times, but next, I have Dalton Knecht, who went to the Lakers. I expected him to go earlier in the draft, but I have him later than where he went because I think he's going to be a really good NBA player, a really good basketball player, and is going to contribute to winning. But I don't think he's going to contribute to winning in fantasy basketball. I think he'll be able to get points and knock down threes and score in other ways. I'm not saying he's just a three-point shooter, but I'm not seeing where he's going to get enough other stats to be a really good fantasy player. And that's okay. He's still going to be really good. But he's a guy that I don't think is as ideal for fantasy. Next, we have Tyler Kolek, who went to the Knicks in the second round. A lot of TJ McConnell comps early on. He's a lefty. Good defender. Really good playmaker. Had a lot of assists in college. I don't remember his exact number. He also had one game where he had an insane amount of assists. I'll pull those numbers up as I'm talking about it. But I think he's a guy that can contribute to winning. He's kind of what I expected, or the type of player I expected them to take within the first round as well. But they didn't, and we will get to that in a bit. Yeah, he had an 18-assist game against DePaul last season. Three tournament games, had 18, 6, and 11 in one, 21, 5, and 11 in another, and then 17, 10, and 3 in their loss. But having three double-doubles, 2-point assist double-doubles in the tournament, yeah, that's pretty good. So that'll play well in fantasy, but not necessarily immediately, because obviously Jalen Brunson's the guy. But I think he's a guy that can come in and be the backup point guard potentially over Deuce McBride, who might be able to still see a good bit of minutes in an off-ball role. But I think Kolick can come in from year one, play 10 minutes off the bench. But he might also just be a guy that is a streamer when Jalen Brunson misses a game here or there. But that's okay. That's also early on, and I think he's got a long career ahead of him in the NBA. The last guy on this slide is Keyshawn George. I went to Washington. I was a little bit lower on him than I think a lot of people were, but I think it's a good spot for him to land. I know he can shoot. Like, that was never a question, but I think they'll allow him to work on other parts of his game and showcase other parts of his game, because I don't think they're expecting to win. So he'll get to be more of a playmaker than he may have been on another team. And if he got drafted to more of a contending team, just a catch and shoot guy, not ideal for fantasy. But with Washington, he'll get to develop and be more of a playmaker. They'll have a lot of guys handling the ball next year, and I think that'll be fun for his development. We'll wrap up with 26 through 30, and you can check out the rest of the rankings at NBCSports.com. But 26, Dylan Jones, a guy that can do a little bit of everything, kind of a well-rounded guy. Probably a rotation piece early on, but perhaps a guy that can eventually be a starter. When Lou Dort's contract has a couple years left on it, I believe two, and then a team option. So if Dylan Jones is ready after that, maybe he can move into a starting role. And then it's just about how well are his stats going to translate while playing with the Thunder. So I like the upside. Good pick by the Thunder. We'll see what happens with that. Then we have Tristan Da Silva, who went to Orlando, inside the top 20. They need some more shooting, and he's a guy that can shoot the ball, doesn't need the ball in his hands, can still score without it, off of cuts. Just a smart basketball player. So not a great fantasy option here. But I think a guy that will be able to play a role for them and help early on. So 28, we have Pacome Dadier, who is the Knicks' first round pick. A young upside play here. Probably not a guy that's going to be part of the rotation for a couple of seasons. But they traded a lot of their picks, so they took an upside swing on a guy they believe in. I like the strategy. I don't think that we're going to be talking about him anytime soon. But if you're rebuilding and you're looking for, a guy, if it's a 30-team league and you're looking for a guy early in the second round, I like the pick there. If it's like a 12-team league and you're looking for a guy early in the third round, or early, yeah, late middle of the third round, if based on trades or whatever, then I like the upside swing there, just like was with the Knicks. Tyler Smith, 29. I liked him coming into the draft. I hate his landing spot. I probably would have had him higher if he was playing anywhere else, but I'm not going to be relying on Doc Rivers to give Tyler Smith minutes. So it might be a few years, but I still think he's a fun talent. He'll get to, he's a bigger guy that can, he's athletic and he can shoot. And I think he'll get to work on his defense and learn and improve there with using his athleticism for a few years. And hopefully long-term he'll still be good, but I'm not confident in him getting minutes anytime soon. And then we have Jacoby Walter wrapping out the top 30. He went to Toronto, which I didn't love. I really liked him earlier in the process of the draft as a 3-and-D guy, but he wasn't a great defender last year, and he had struggles as a shooter. So it's kind of hard to be super confident about him, but he was drafted in the top 20. So I'm going to say draft him in the top 30 of your rookie draft, especially if you feel a little bit of confidence in him. I still have some. It's kind of dwindling, but hopefully he'll be able to figure it out with Toronto. And it won't be too, I guess, too much of a logjam for minutes on the wing. So I think that'll be something that they have to figure out pretty quickly. Or maybe not pretty quickly, like over the course of next season, because they still have Emmanuel Quickly, RJ Barrett, seeing guard minutes. I believe they have they'll have to do something with Gary Trent Jr. They have Grady Dick, who they drafted last year. And how does Jacoby Walter fit into that? Not entirely sure. So we'll see. Hopefully it'll work out. That is the top 30. There is still a number of fun picks after that. Guys that either went in the second round or went undrafted that are worth looking at. But you can get more of that in my rankings at NBCSports.com. But that is going to do it for this episode of the Tank Me Later podcast. This is the first one I think I've done in a while without a guest, so I am exhausted, and I really need to drink some water. So we're going to go ahead and call it here. You can follow me at NoahRubin22. Follow us at FBI Basketball. We will have some more content on the way. I'm currently hosting / working on a rookie mock with some other awesome analysts. When we have that finished, there will be a show talking about that. Hopefully I'll have a guest, at least one guest with me to talk about some of the picks. And then we're also doing a 30 team dynasty mock right now, which if you can imagine, it's going very slow. So we'll either do some sort of progress update podcast and then there will be one probably recapping it. So hopefully we'll get a bunch of different people to talk about that. And then we'll have Summer League coming up. So we'll have some content there. Hopefully, I think I've got a few guests lined up to come in and talk about how some prospects have been doing. And then it will be a startup season for Dynasty League. So we'll have some fun content there as well. But that's going to do it for this episode of the Tank Me Later podcast. And I will see you next time.
You just listened to another episode from the Fantasy Basketball International Podcast Network. Thanks for joining us. And for more information about joining our community, please check out our website at fbibasketball.com.